to Watching the Whistleblowers, and I'm John Kiriakou. Today we're going to tell you about one of the most important whistleblowers in the world that you've probably never heard of. On today's episode, we speak to the billion-dollar man. We want to tell you about a banking whistleblower who has had a greater impact on the international financial system than anybody else in the world. Bradley Birkenfeld was a longtime banker and seasoned financial expert for a series of some of the biggest and most important banks in Switzerland. That is, until he saw that international law was being broken. Brad Birkenfeld then brought down not just money laundering and income tax evasion in Swiss banks. He brought down money laundering and income tax evasion, period. It's because of Brad Birkenfeld that the wealthiest people in the world can no longer avoid paying the taxes that the rest of us must pay by hiding their money in numbered accounts in the world's financial centers. And he paid for that public service with his freedom. When this was finally over, Birkenfeld published a memoir of his experience called Lucifer's Banker. The book has already been translated into more than a dozen languages and has become an international bestseller. The accompanying website contains the primary source documentation about the case released to the public by WikiLeaks. What it shows is a pattern of corruption and deceit among officials in both the U.S. and Swiss governments and the lengths to which they went to protect the rich and famous from prosecution. We now want to bring in the guest of the hour, Brad Birkenfeld. So we're going to start, Brad, by talking about how you got into this position in the first place, how you became a whistleblower. We'll start off with this, with your pre-whistleblowing life. You had a good life. You were a successful international banker. You would work for some of the most important banks in the world. You were making plenty of money. But then you saw something that bothered you, and you decided to do something about it. Walk us through how that happened.
Certainly. Well, I worked in Switzerland in the private banking sector with Credit Suisse, Barclays, and UBS. And my last employer, UBS, I was a director there in Geneva, Switzerland. And what we were doing, we're covering the U.S. market out of Switzerland. So we had offices in Lugano, Geneva, and Zurich. And we would travel every quarter to the United States to see existing and potential clients. Anyways, what would happen is the bank would promote this, obviously, to bring in more money to invest and to have net new money. So over time, what had happened was what we did in Switzerland was totally legal. We were following Swiss law. I was a resident there. I had a work permit there. And what they had done was essentially known that what we were doing was a gray area, meaning traveling to the U.S., because we weren't licensed. SEC license to give investment advice and so forth. So mysteriously, they slipped in a three-page document to our intranet, the internal computer system. And my colleague brought it to my attention one day, and I was a bit flustered by it because I said, look, I'm very busy. Well, what do you have to show me? He says, well, I think it's important. And this three-page document, we were never told about it, and we were never trained on it, which is a big no-no. So anyways, I said, well, show me where you got this document. I've never seen this. And he showed it to me on the internet. And I said, go back to your desk. I'll talk to you later. And I printed it off twice. And I read it. And it was shocking because essentially what this three-page document said was what we were doing was not okay. And you were breaking the law. So really what the bank was trying to do was being greedy, have us do this business, but putting all the risk on us and saying, you know, you got to do this. And obviously, you know, the levels you have to meet for your bonus and promotion and all that, they're promoting you to bring in more money, obviously. So anyways, this document effectually contradicted everything they were telling us to do. So I went to my boss and I said, well, what the hell is this? And he says, oh, don't make a big deal. I said, don't make a big deal. This is a very important matter here. You're putting everybody at risk, and this is not right. And everyone else on the desk was Swiss. I was the only American. So I saw what was happening. It was a CYA, a cover your ass for the bank. So if we got caught, they would have blamed it on us. Said, well, you didn't read the memo. Well, you never trained us on it, and you didn't tell us about it, and you secretly slipped it in the internet, and you always say you have to know everything on the internet. Well, so I made a big to-do about it, and I said, okay, you're going to play that game. So I immediately, as I should, as a director of the bank, I sent it to the head of my legal department and I sent it to the head of my compliance department, two different areas. And I said, I need an answer to this document. That email I sent, I then printed it off and sent it also by inter-office mail. So you can't claim you didn't get it. Well, I did that for 1 month and there was no answer, which is very bizarre. As a director of the bank, you always go to legal compliance and try and get an answer if you have a question. So then I sent it the following month, no answer. So, and sent it by inter-office as well. So for me, I knew what was happening. It was sort of a setup and I saw what the bank was going to do. So I sort of checkmated them and said, okay, I'm going to start taking documents out of the bank. I wasn't stealing documents. I took documents that were given to me. So that was my property. Everything from PowerPoint presentations to accounting, phone records of bankers, everything that you could piece and puzzle together to show what I was saying was correct. And then the third month I sent it again and there was no answer. So then a week or two later, I came in and I resigned. And they said, well, why are you resigning? I said, please don't play that game with me. You know exactly what's going on here. And I want an answer to the three-page document. And they said, well, you'll never get an answer. I said, well, I guess again, you will get an answer and I'll make sure of it. So what happened was I resigned and effectually I then complained to the board of directors of the bank. I sent it by certified mail to every member of the UBS board of directors in Zurich and said, now it's your problem. You've been informed, you know this is wrong, and now I'm holding you accountable. And that caused such a nuclear bomb in the bank. Everyone was panicking. Now, at this point, I'm outside the bank because you leave the bank and they don't want you to work there anymore when you resign. Mm-hmm. And you're still being paid. In Switzerland, called gardening leave, as if you would sit in your garden and garden. But I was paid for 6 months, and I did this quite quickly, knowing that I had all the facts. I had my lawyer in Geneva, and he said, yeah, you can't work under these conditions. So they called an investigation, and they asked me to help them. So I said, you need me to help you tell you how you're breaking the law. Wonderful. So I met with them, with my attorney, and I gave them some correct information and some incorrect information just to test them. Then about a week and a half later, I met with some of my colleagues who were still working at the bank privately at like a bar or something. And I said, what'd they talk about? And all the things I mentioned, they didn't investigate. I said, what do you mean? He said, no, they didn't talk about that and that and that. I said, but that's what I told them. So obviously this was another cover up, even though it was put right under their noses. So that's when I went and picked up and I went to the US government, hoping that my own government would actually embrace me with the most significant, unprecedented tax scandal in the world.
And that is what you did. You went to the U.S. Treasury Department. You performed what many of us believe was a national service by reporting this evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, and illegality. But then the U.S. Justice Department came after you. How did that happen? What was going through your mind at the time?
Well, here's the problem. I think for most of your listeners, if they don't understand whistleblowing, it's a real education in what whistleblowers like yourself, John, went through. Meaning you're trying to do the right thing when you see something wrong. I mean, that's a human trait. And essentially what I was trying to say was I tried to fix the problem internally. I wasn't fired, I quit. And then I then continued it with the board of directors and so forth. So by going to my government, I figured, well, law enforcement is certainly gonna be interested in this and so forth. Well, the opposite was true. I was a little bit naive in that sense, meaning one, why didn't they uncover it? Where was the DOJ for the last 50 years? That's the first question. The second question is, as a whistleblower, they can't take the credit. And the third point being that maybe they wanted this to continue because some of their very rich donors, not just at the DOJ, but the administration at the time, wouldn't want their rich and powerful friends exposed. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this is crazy. So you know it's going on. Here's a guy that comes in and gives you the keys to the kingdom and you attack him. And so I couldn't find a law firm in Washington that wasn't conflicted because UBS had them all on retainer. That was the first. And the second thing was I had to go with a second rate firm. Unfortunately, I didn't think the U.S. was going to be my problem. I thought the Swiss government or the Swiss banks and even UBS would be the problem. So that's really where the crux was. And I came in good faith to try to do the right thing. And they kept yelling at me and they were hostile towards me at the very beginning. And I said, look, I can't give you names of clients until you give me a subpoena. It says, well, we're not going to give you immunity and we're not giving you a subpoena. I said, well, you're not getting the names. And we almost got into fisticuffs in DOJ headquarters. I'll never forget it. And what really made me wonder was I said, now I'm really in this neck deep, but I held my ground. I said, no, I'm going to hold firm on this. And ironically, later, once the investigations and so forth started in the Senate and UBS was called to testify, they gave the same answer. We can't give you these names until we change the laws in Switzerland. And Parliament in Zurich had to change the law in order for them to give up the names to the U.S. government. So what's different about what I said vis-a-vis what they said? Nothing. Same answer, because you would go to jail for breaking bank secrecy, where I lived at the time. So really what was going on here was the DOJ was furious and hates whistleblowers. They're very hostile towards them. They don't like them. They don't get the credit, as I said before. And I ultimately went to the U.S. Senate, where they gave me a subpoena, which gave me the ability to give up the names. So I met with the Senate for 10 hours. I met with the IRS for many hours. I met with the SEC. But the DOJ hated this. Why? They couldn't compartmentalize this scandal, and they couldn't take the credit. So what did they do? Oh, let's go attack this guy, make him the bad guy, just like you, John. Make one guy the bad guy, even though all these other bad actors are out there. My bosses, they worked there for 10, 20 years and had been doing this. And I was the one who had the courage to come forward and say, no, this is wrong. So that's really the essence of how the DOJ, and as we even see today in Washington, the DOJ is infested with corrupt people who are incompetent and complicit and criminally involved.
Brad, what was the government's goal, do you think, in going after you rather than the people who had actually been breaking the law? And were any of the tax evaders ever prosecuted?
Yes, the tax evaders, some of them were, very few. And there's something called the Offshore Voluntary Disclosure Program. And with that, you're allowed to come in and come in honestly, tell them about your account, and pay, say, 30% on the high watermark of your account. So let's just say they took a 10-year period, and let's say it was $10 million, they would say, you're gonna pay 30% on $10 million, even though today it's worth, say, $7 million. We will keep you anonymous, you won't go to jail, end of story. But the problem was, they wanted to send a message to all these 19,000 millionaires and billionaires to come under that program because we got this banker. No, you didn't get me. I came to you. You never even know I existed. So that's the real rub. The second thing here is some of the clients I gave to them, which they're not allowed to come under the Offshore Voluntary Disclosure Program, people like Leonard Lauder, Jack Manning, Kevin Costner, all these people have never been prosecuted. Why? So these people and many others were given the secret anonymity and be able to walk free because the DOJ didn't want to give me credit for that. So you can see some laws for some people, some laws for others. It's a double system, and it's, as you're seeing today in Washington, the DOJ is complicit in criminality. So my whole point here was, okay, you're gonna make one guy the bad guy, but yet you're not even doing your job because you can't indict 19,000 people. And the head of the IRS stated in the US Senate under oath that if we have your name or an ongoing investigation, you're not allowed to come into the program. Well, then indict them.
How have your revelations changed the banking industry? I imagine there have been big changes.
Well, quite frankly, unfortunately, the Senate doesn't understand international finance. And the laws they passed, such as FATCA, for instance, was a disaster. It essentially was put in place because of me. And what happens with that is it just makes foreign banks report back to the United States everything about an American client, whether it's Hong Kong, South Africa, Switzerland, or wherever. The problem here is, though, what I did was so unprecedented and historic. They changed the treaties in Switzerland. They changed the laws. They actually went to Parliament and had to change the law, which broke bank secrecy. It's over. And then Hillary Clinton got involved as Secretary of State, and we can get into that later, where she was working on settling this case. But there's another whistleblower by the name of Julian Assange, who came up with a very critical document, which is on my website, luciferspanker.com. And that document was a WikiLeaks cable. It was a CIA secret cable, which I showed you, John. You've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And this cable essentially said between Hillary Clinton and her counterpart in Switzerland, three times in this memo, they said, we need a political solution to the UBS case. Now, nobody was ever supposed to see this document, but thanks to Julian Assange, it's out there. But more importantly, what they did was they closed down a small company operating in Iran out of Switzerland, and they took two Chinese Uyghurs from Guantanamo Bay and settled them in Switzerland to settle the UBS tax scandal. So what is the end result here? What's the message? 350 million Americans got screwed by the Obama administration. That's a fact. Why? Because they allowed a system to be corrupted so they could protect their rich and elite friends and just use some other smokescreen to settle this case and bury it under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they put me in jail to try and shut me up. But the opposite happened. And I wrote my book and did a website and I lecture. And that's essentially what I'm trying to do even with you now.
All right, Brad, hang right there. We'll be back with Brad Birkenfeld right after the break. When we come back, we talk to Brad Birkenfeld about how his attorneys continued to fight for him after he went to prison. You've been watching The Whistleblowers.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense?
Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Is your media a reflection of reality? In a world transformed, what will make you feel safer? Isolation or community? Are you going the right way or are you being led somewhere? Which direction? What is truth? What is fake? In a world corrupted, you need to descend. So join us in the depths, or remain in the shallows.
I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Whistleblowers. We've been talking with Bradley Birkenfeld, a longtime banker and seasoned financial expert who brought down money laundering and income tax evasion. Bradley Birkenfeld's story takes a very strange twist. We've already talked to him about his arrest and why he was arrested. He had gone to the Treasury Department to report evidence of illegality. And then the entire weight of the U.S. government seemed to fall on his head. Why did that happen? Well, thanks to WikiLeaks, we now know why that happened. You see, behind the scenes, while Brad was making his revelations to the U.S. Department of the Treasury, Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, was active at the same time. The United States had several prisoners of Uyghur origin, Chinese Muslims. They were housed at Guantanamo at the notorious U.S. prison camp there, and they needed to be resettled. Well, the governments of Albania and Fiji agreed to take two Uyghurs each. There were still two that needed to find somewhere to go, and no country wanted them. So Hillary Clinton called the president of Switzerland and said, "We want you to take these two Uyghurs." The president of Switzerland said that the country was not interested in taking any Uyghurs or any other people from Guantanamo. This discussion went back and forth for several months until finally Hillary Clinton sent a cable to the president of Switzerland through the U.S. embassy in that country. And she said, "We really want you to take these two Uyghurs." The president of Switzerland then came back and said, "We'll take the two Uyghurs if you arrest Bradley Birkenfeld," to which Hillary Clinton said, "Done." And that's exactly what happened. an order went from the State Department, specifically from the office of the Secretary of State herself, to the Department of Justice, saying arrest Bradley Birkenfeld, an American citizen, and charge him with a crime, any crime. It doesn't matter what kind of crime. Bradley Birkenfeld had brought down money laundering and tax evasion at every bank in Switzerland. He was to pay for that with his own freedom. It wasn't because he had done anything wrong. In fact, he had done a great service for the US government. It was because Hillary Clinton needed a favor. And that favor was to take two Chinese Muslims and resettle them in Switzerland. It's a sad story, but that's how the world works. And sometimes the little guy gets caught up in the plans of the big guys. That's what happened in this case. Bradley Birkenfeld lost 3 years of his life to prison, and it was because Hillary Clinton wanted him to. But don't worry, things got better. Now we want to bring back Bradley Birkenfeld, who is also the author of the book Lucifer's Banker, which is a memoir of his experiences being jailed for whistleblowing on some of the biggest banks in the world. Brad, when you were charged and convicted and sentenced to prison, you didn't just sit back and take it. You went to prison, but your attorneys continued to fight for you. And they filed a whistleblower reward claim on your behalf that ended up putting you in the Guinness Book of World Records. How did that happen?
Well, that's correct. And a lot of people assume wrongly that I did this for the money, and that's totally incorrect. When I first started whistleblowing back in 2005 and resigned from the bank, the law hadn't been passed yet. The law got passed in December 2006 when I was long out of the bank. So how could I have known that there was some law coming down later in the U.S. Senate? So that's very important for your audience to understand. But what had happened was they said, you had given up so much information that the IRS whistleblowing office felt compelled under law that I was entitled to an award by the unprecedented information, which you can go onto my website and see the letter they wrote about me. They said the information I gave was so incredible, we never would have been able to uncover it. And the prosecutor even said in front of the judge at my sentencing, if I hadn't come into the DOJ, this would still be going on. So why are you attacking me and putting me in jail? This was the rich and powerful elite that got to the top people and the Obama administration, Obama himself, Eric Holder, who represented UBS in private practice, and Hillary Clinton, who had her donors protected, said, make this guy pay. And so I saw the handwriting on the wall, but ultimately I got the largest whistleblowing award. And for that, I was put in the Guinness Book of World Records, which they had to create a whole new section under whistleblowing because of me, which I'm very proud of.
Brad, over the past decade, you've helped a lot of whistleblowers to stay on their feet, and you're always there to provide advice, encouragement, even legal referrals. I know that you're interested in a more formal way to help and to encourage whistleblowers. So tell us about your plans for the future.
Well, that's correct, John. I do go out of my way to help others because I know how difficult it is for the harassment, intimidation, retaliation, and so forth. And whistleblowers have a lot of courage to come forward, and there's not many people supporting them. You're on an island by yourself, and I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you're fresh out of friends, as we say, as a whistleblower. But what we need is whistleblowers to make it a better society. And what I've said to myself is my case was so historic, and it transformed a trillion dollar industry, and we're still feeling the effects today, where the DOJ fined 100 Swiss banks. We've brought back over $25 billion to the U.S. Treasury and back into American banks. And that money gets invested and taxed through perpetuity, which means it's multiples of billions that I have saved the U.S. taxpayer and the U.S. Mm-hmm. government. And so what I need to do is to get this message out to every person who will listen and who will be rational in their thinking to say, why don't you embrace this man? He is an extension of law enforcement. He had the courage to change such an industry. And this was overseas. This wasn't in America. This was overseas money that they could never get to. So now I help people, as you rightly say, I get them sometimes lawyers, I give them financial support, I give them emotional support. I also get the media involved where I think it's necessary. And this is what we try to do. And ultimately, I'll be opening an office in Europe to help European whistleblowers file claims in the United States that are U.S.-centric.
Bradley Brookenfeld, thanks so much for joining us. That's all we have for you today. I'm John Kiriakou, and this has been The Whistleblowers.